You are listening to Gangland Wire, hosted by former Kansas City Police Intelligence Unit Detective Gary Jenkins.
Hello, all you wiretappers out there. I guess I feel guilty after shorting y'all for the whole month of July. I'm going to give you a second bonus episode here in August. This is kind of self-serving, I guess. First of all, don't forget to hit me up on my Venmo app. Jinx Law is the code. Buy me a cup of coffee. Shot in the beer. I know Mark Ryan just hit me up again. Thanks, Mark. Here's what I want to talk about today. I'm looking for some help. Is there any video people out there that what I want, I'm working on a documentary about the Savella Spiro gang war in the 1970s, of which I was kind of in the middle of as a surveillance officer back in those days. But I'm doing some reenactment footage, and I'm shooting it just with a regular HD camera, some of it even with my phone. That phone is as good as any camera, it seemed like. And I want to be able to put some kind of a quick process on this reenactment footage, like of men standing around a truck trailer, unloading stuff from it, to show a men stealing from truck docks. I want to show people sitting around meetings, just show hands, you know, smoking cigarettes and doing things like that. I want to show somebody building a bomb, making a pipe bomb, and some things like that. And so I'd put all this footage into one stream of HD footage, and I need somebody to put some kind of a process on that to kind of age the footage a little bit. I don't want it real extreme. I don't want it look like it was home video or shot with a, you know, an 8mm camera or anything like that. Just something to give it that kind of 70s TV, maybe a VHS look, just something that takes out that HD effect that is so noticeable. So if anybody's out there that would like to help me with that, hit me up at ganglandwire@gmail.com. I put a clip up on my Gangland Wire Facebook page to see what kind of video that we're talking about. This is just me following the truck and we're talking about, you know, the narrator or one of my experts, my talking heads, will be talking about setting up trucks, trailers to be hijacked, that kind of a thing. Hit me up on my Facebook page or my email or make a comment on this post on my website. And I appreciate all you guys. I've been getting a lot of feedback here lately, people asking questions and interacting with me, and I like that. So try to interact with me. It makes it more worthwhile. You know, I ain't making no money out of this to speak of, but it's a lot of fun. I like interacting with all you mob fans out there. And I'll tell you a little bit about this documentary, a little bit about this mob war. Now, you might want to go back to some of my first few episodes if you don't remember them or you've never listened to the first few episodes, and I talk about the Savella versus Spiro War. Well, this is what I'm making the movie about. And in that, I don't really go too much into detail about the eldest brother, Nick Spiro, who was killed, actually before I even went into the intelligence unit, was killed in, I believe, 1973. And that was the start of this war, basically. Also trying to come up with a name. Right now, I've got Last Brother Standing. It's two brothers, Nick and Cork Savella, who are the traditional mob bosses. And they go into war against the Spiro brothers, Nick Spiro, Carl Spiro, Mike Spiro, and Joe Spiro. And that, actually, there's nobody standing by the end of that in modern times, but there are a lot of people get killed during this time. So if you got an idea about a mob war between brothers in the 1970s, why, hit me up with that title suggestion, too. This is kind of the story of the ruling Savella brothers, as I said, Nick and Cork Savella, and then the upstart Young Turks, the Spiro brothers, Nick, Mike, Joe, and Carl. Basically, this was a generation gap played out in a mob war. You know, a lot of us, when you came of age in the 60s into the 70s, there was a big distance between us and our parents and our parents' generation. And part of it was drugs. Part of it was emotive dress, the Vietnam War. Well, the same thing played out in the mafia here in Kansas City. And it kind of played out in the Danny Green mob war in Cleveland also. These young upstarts wanted to move in and have more of a piece of the action and have more important jobs and make more money, and the old guys want to keep everything close to them and traditional. Now, in this town, the old school Nick Civella and his brother Corky Civella were born in the early 1900s, and the Young Turks Sparrows were all born, you know, around World War II. And just like the baby, like I said, just like the baby boomers resisted our previous generation's conservative values and influence on society, the Spiro brothers resisted the conservative mafia leadership of the Civellas. A quick overview is how this began. The eldest brother, Nick Spiro, was coming of age in the late 50s. He's a career criminal. All he does is steal. He joins a mob connected robbery crew, and they traveled around the country robbing grocery stores. Now back in the 70s and 80s, that was a pretty good gig, because if you remember, before ATMs and debit cards and all that, everybody used to cash their checks at grocery stores. So a grocery store easily around payday would have $20,000-$25,000 in it, which was a pretty good score, much better than robbing a bank, because you didn't have to deal with the feds either. They would fly to other parts of the country. In particular, they were flying down to Texas, go to Houston, for example, rob a grocery store, have a rented car, dump the rented car in a crow name, dump the rented car off. They'd mail the guns and the money back and take the plane back. Now, they got caught up here in Kansas City, and Nick Spiro was part of one of these. And the guy that got caught because a package broke open was a man named Sam Palma, who was a pretty close connected mob guy to the old traditional mob, to the Civella family, and Tuffy DeLuna, who was an underboss. He decides he's going to plead guilty. And the night before he's scheduled to plead guilty, somebody murders him. Now, we don't know who, but unknown persons set this murder up to look like it was suicide, and many mob informants implicated Nick Spiro. Now, this must have been what Nick Civella and the hierarchy wanted. They must have been afraid that he was going to do something in order to get rid of him just before he was going to report to plead guilty, and they probably would have just taken him away that day. Because Nick Spiro now kind of seems to graduate, and he gets a job at a national truck line, Yellow Freight, on the docks. And he sets up a scheme, and I just see Nick Civella's hand behind this scheme. He hijacks, he sets up a trailer load of liquor to be stolen. Then Nick Spiro goes to management and Yellow Freight Security and says, I can get this trailer back. And shortly after that, he locates this entire trailer, minus a few cases of booze, of course, for his trouble, I'm sure, and whoever helped him. And turns it back into management. Now, Yellow Freight management says, hey, this guy's great. They're pretty grateful, and they end up promoting him to a position of authority, and that gives him access to all the truck schedules, cargo manifest, and even he got himself in a position where he's even kind of given a voice in whether or not an employee will be prosecuted. He was kind of their liaison with the unofficial liaison with the union, it seems to me like, and the mob and the criminals that were working on the Yellow Freight truck lines, and there was a bunch of them at the time, because the Teamsters Union were, you know, totally mob dominated and helped people get jobs. That was part of their power. Well, after Nick Spiro gets in this job, Yellow Freight start noticing that there's more and more trailers of merchandise, and this is like small items like electric knives, perfume, batteries, film, booze, are missing, and these are easy defense items. You just get a trailer load of that and take it to another city, and another mob will have some of these independent stores out here that will be happy to take that off their hands, a trailer load of that, take that off their hands, and they'll get it for like 50 cents on the dollar and turn around and sell it for 75 cents on the dollar, and everybody's happy. Nick is kind of, they start noticing all these things are missing, and by this time they suspect him, but he's kind of hard to fire because his mob connections through the Teamsters Union. Finally, Yellow Freight will pay him a cash settlement just to resign. Well, he moves on to running a jewelry theft ring, and actually his youngest brother, Carl Spiro, is the team leader. He gets another Teamsters job, and he's so popular he's elected union steward. He has a part-time job with a mob-connected vending company, and he intimidates stores and bars into installing this company's vending machines. He is a young mobster on the management track. He is on the rise. But at the same time, this is when, by then we're up to the later 60s, and this is when the generation gap rears its head up. Nick Spiro is kind of a younger, charismatic leader of men, and he's also affecting the look and dress of other people of his generation. In other words, he grows his hair out long. He sports a large Fu Manchu mustache. He's even seen wearing kind of flowery bell-bottom pants and colorful shirts. Looks like a hippie, as one guy said. Who is this guy? He looks like a fucking hippie. Now, the conservative Nick Zavala has always dictated that none of his men shall have facial hair. Now, that's, you know, believe that or not, and I bet that's in every other mob family in the country during this time. It was like an unwritten rule that nobody grew beards or mustaches. And they all wanted to dress like Nick, and he always dressed with a dress shirt and slacks and maybe a snap-brim hat or a fedora. And Nick and Corky, who ran our crime family, that's how they dressed, and that's how all their guys dressed. Now, informants will start reporting that Nick Zavala does not really like or trust this Nick Spiro because of this dress, and more importantly, because of his demeanor. Nick Zavala, the boss, is quiet and professional, and he knows people, but he's not out in the joints. He really is like a businessman, a CEO of the company that runs the company. While Nick Spiro, he's young and loud and flamboyant, and the younger guys see him as a leader. And he becomes kind of a threat to the old line because of that. Plus, they're everybody's denigrating him because of the way he dresses. They even think that start rumors that he's probably maybe dealing in drugs because that's the deal with the hippies. You know, they all do drugs, and he's probably dealing in drugs. They don't like him. They say he walks out on bar tabs and things like that. So, you know, it's just like any time you're out in an organization, he's out in this organization. Everybody starts going for him and coming up with rumors how to denigrate him. And you know, these attributes he had, being kind of flamboyant and a leader among his peers in the criminal underworld, those are great for the boss above him if he can control that man. But in this case, he cannot control Nick Spiro. He was once asked about joining the Zavala organization rather than operating on his own, which is what he was, like an independent operator, had his own pieces of action, make scores. He'd have to pay a tribute, of course. He'd have to kick up, and we understand he always kicked up through Carl Zavala or Corky Zavala. But he once said, when asked this question, "I ain't no jockstrap. They use you all up until the stretch is gone. Then they throw you away. I've always been my own man. I don't listen to anybody but my father, and he is dead." Well, this says it in a nutshell right here. I've always been my own man, and that is not the kind of guy that Nick Zavala wants. And that's the kind of guy, if he's got his own crews going, that can become a threat. Now, this is just the first few minutes of the documentary. This story will go on to describe a war to the death between these two opposing factions in the Kansas City underworld. Turning point comes when Nick Zavala dictates, and he would had to approve of this, that Nick Spiro be murdered. And he was. Now, he leaves behind three brothers, Joe and Mike and Carl. And Carl Spiro is exactly like his older brother. He's kind of loud, he's real flamboyant, he's aggressive, and he was really charismatic. He was a leader among other young criminals of his peer group or his age. Now, I will, in this documentary, I personally will be in it quite a little bit, because I want to take the viewers on a trip that kind of exposes this mob war from the inside. I was assigned on a surveillance team of officers and agents that stayed right in the middle, trying to stop any more murders or catch any of the folks trying to commit murder. So it's kind of a police procedural. It's an inside look at police operations in mob investigations. And it's, you know, what we've learned most of it in hindsight now is a benefit of trials and informants and things like that, kind of what was going on during this time. And it's quite an up and down story and a ride with a thrill a minute with bombs and torture and shootings and sex, drugs, and rock and roll, as we used to say. Well, there's no sex in it, really. I guess I should put a little sex in it. I don't know. I never have, but except for that one story I told. I can't remember that gal's name. Lucky Deluxe. If you didn't ever listen to that one, you want to hear some sex stories. This gal, I interviewed her, and I can't remember the name of it now. I know she operated as a comedian and a dancer under the name Lucky Deluxe. She tells about her life as a sex worker. Anyhow, I digress. I need to wrap this up now and get back to working on this movie. I just came up with a little special effect that I can use to use. I did an Freedom of Information Act request on Nick Sparrow, and I got a lot of reports where I got a lot of information on him. And I came up with a special effect on how to use those reports in a documentary to show that it is an official police or FBI report, and then pull up the words in kind of a tricky, dramatic manner. You know, filmmakers are always trying to come up with some tricky, dramatic ways to show rather than tell. That's what filmmakers do. They try to show rather than tell, and even in documentaries. So, If you know of anybody that can, or you can yourself, put this kind of a 70s effect on a strip of film, I'd film all the reenactment scenes that I wanted to have the same effect on. We'd upload it to Google Docs or something, and you could download it. And if you'd put it on for me, or if you'd tell me exactly how to do it in a real easy manner, I would appreciate it. And just hit me up on ganglandwire@gmail.com, or make a comment on my Facebook page, or make a comment on this this blog post here that comes out with the podcast. If you have a problem with drugs or alcohol, or you have a friend or relative has a problem with drugs or alcohol, make your first call to First Call. Call 816-361-5900, or go to their website, www.firstcallkc.org. And don't forget, my first documentary, Gangland Wire, is available on my website, or for a donation of $25 or more. If you get the DVD, you get some special features. I'm still selling a few of those every month, but a lot of people are renting it too. You can rent it on Amazon for only $1.99. You know, I get a little piece of that action too. I've got my Kansas City Mob Tour app. I get a little piece of that action. Get that on the Apple Store if you want to take a mob tour of Kansas City. I have my book, Leaving Vegas, How FBI Wiretaps Ended Mob Domination of Las Vegas Casinos. I would suggest you get the Kindle version, because I linked a whole bunch of the real wiretaps to the book. And so when the book is taking information from the wiretaps, there's a link and you can go right to the wiretap and listen to the actual wiretap. I thought it was particularly innovative. I've never seen another, especially not another mob book like that, or any other kind of book like that. There may be some out there, but I've never gotten them. So good night, all you wiretappers out there, and look for my next story coming out next Monday morning. I'm trying to get back in that usual pattern. My friend Cam Robinson from Chicago, we've done some stuff on the Providence, Rhode Island Mafia that I need to edit. And my friend David Breakspear and I do an interview about cops and crooks that'll be out this next coming Monday. Good night, folks.
Music provided by our good friend and super fan from Portland, Oregon, Casey McBride. Thanks, Casey.